просто.
Okay, I never actually did this before, so I may never spoke here before. So tonight is Matzoy Chanukah, and it says in Svarim that at the end of a Yom Tov, the end of a Chag, it's worthwhile to think about what lessons can we take from the Yom Tov and take them with us into the rest of the year. There was a Roshiva in Eretz Yisrael, Rav Avram Ganachovsky, who was the Roshiva in Shabin, and a very special tzaddik. And they have notes that he made for himself at the end of Chanukah, lessons that he wanted to take from Chanukah into the year. So, for example, one of the things that he wrote is that you learn from Chanukah that when you do a mitzvah, you should try to do it in the way that's most mehudar, not just to do it, to get it done, but to do it in a way that's most beautiful. Give thought to that. And he himself writes in that note, as an example of what it means to do a mitzvah in a way that's very mehudar, he tells a story about Rav Chaim Oizer, the Rav of Vilna, that he was walking together with someone else, and somebody came over to them and asked them directions. So Rav Chaim Oizer said, we're walking more or less in that general direction, and we'll walk you to your destination. So afterwards, this fellow who had been accompanying Rav Chaim Oizer asked him, why it wasn't exactly on the way, it was a little bit out of the way, why did you need to do that? Why didn't you just tell him what direction to go? And he could ask directions further, like an Eretz Yisrael, and say, go hala hala v'sham tishav. So Rav Chaim Oizer said, didn't you notice that this fellow, when he asked his direction, that he stuttered a little bit, and he seemed very self-conscious? And it seems to be a person that it's not easy for him to ask people directions, and therefore I didn't want to make him have to ask again. So I took him all the way to his door. So he writes, that's an example of doing the mitzvah of chesed, but to have the thought to do it, how can you do it in the most mohder way. So that's one kind of lesson to take from Chanukah away into the rest of the year. So in that spirit, I wanted to think about perhaps another lesson that we can learn from Chanukah, and from a particular aspect of Chanukah, and perhaps it has relevance to our situation and to our times. You know that Parshas Miketz, which we read on Shabbos, always falls out on Chanukah. It says in very early Poskim, an allusion to this idea to this fact that Miketz always falls out in Parshas Chanukah. Because it says in the Pasuk in Parshas Miketz that when Yosef was telling his steward to prepare the meal for the brothers, so he told them, Tvach, Tevach, V'hochin. So the last letter of Tevach with V'hochin is the letters of Chanukah. It spells Chanukah. So that's a remez. The Parshas Miketz always falls out on Chanukah. The Tevach, V'hochin is the letters of Chanukah. Now, usually the rule with these things is that if somebody just thinks of a gematria or such an allusion, so you don't have to give it that much weight. But if it's something that has a very long history, then perhaps it's really something that has a meaning that lies beneath the surface. So I want to try to explore. This is a very old idea. The Eliyahu Rabbah brings it in the Shifta Gibbarim. This goes back many, many centuries. This remez, apparently they had a tradition that this pasuk of Utvayav Tevach V'Hochein has a particular connection to Chanukah. A Rashi on the pasuk of Utvayav Tevach V'Hochein explains that what was Yosef saying to the steward? He said that you should show the brothers. Anybody know what does Rashi say over there on Utvayav Tevach V'Hochein? Rashi says that it means he told his steward, show the brothers that the meat is properly shechted. It has an OU. And not only that, but we took out the Gid HaNosha. Tvayach Telach, show them the Beis HaShchita, show them that it had Shchita. And V'Hochin, show them that the meat was prepared properly, that the Gid HaNosha was removed from the meat. That way they'll know it's a kosher meal, kosher catered meals. And even in the palace of the king, you can get a kosher catered meal. And that way they'll be comfortable eating. So the word V'Hochin apparently has a particular connection to Gid HaNosha. So many Svarim discuss what it seems that there's some connection here. If we take this remez seriously, there's a connection here between Gid HaNosha and Chanukah. The remez to Chanukah is in the words Tvayach Tevach V'Hochin. The letters of Chanukah are in Tvayach Tevach V'Hochin. In Parshas Miketz, that's where we lay in. It's an allusion to the fact that we... Oh, I'm not recording it. Oh, well. Anyway. Okay. Anyway, So again, the Eli Rabbah, the Shulta Gibarim, they say that there's a remez to Chanukah in the pasuk of Tvayach Tevach V'Hochin, because Tevach V'Hochin, the last ches with V'Hochin is the letters of Chanukah. It's a remez that Parshas Miketz falls out on Chanukah. At the same time, we know from Rashi that V'Hochin refers to Gid HaNosha. So if A equals B and B equals C, so we can perhaps build a bridge here that Gid HaNosha is connected to Chanukah. And what would that mean? And there's many different approaches how to, what this, in many Svarim, how to deal with this. But I have a suggestion of my own. The Shmuel is the story with the Gidon Asher. We know that the story that Yaakov on his way to the encounter with Esav, so he was met by a malach. Rashi, Chazal say that it was the malach of Esav, the Sar of Esav, and he struggled with him the whole night. And he saw that he wasn't able to overcome Yaakov, and he hit him in the thigh, dislocated his thigh. And Yaakov, after that, was limping and hobbling. And because of that, that's why we don't eat the Gidon Asher. So what exactly did this mystical encounter and struggle and smiting the Gidon Asher, what did it represent? So it says in Zohar that the Sar shel Esav knew that Hakol Kol Yaakov, that Yaakov's strength comes from Limud HaTorah. And therefore, he wanted to overpower Yaakov's Torah. He wanted to destroy the Kol of Yaakov. And that was the struggle. But at the end of the night, at the end of a night full of struggle, he saw that he's not going to be able to accomplish. He won't be able to destroy the Kol Yaakov. So what did he do? He came at Yaakov from behind and hit him in the hip. And says the Zohar, that represents that he was Pegeh B'tamchin D'Oraisa. Tamchin is like saying Hebrew L'tmoch, to support. He smote him in the support of Torah. He wasn't able to destroy Torah itself, but he was able to weaken Yaakov in the sense of the Tamchin D'Oraisa, the support of Torah in Kal Yisrael. What does that mean? So the traditional understanding of the Zohar is that Esav wasn't able to destroy Torah, that there will always be limit on Torah in Kal Yisrael. He was able to weaken the readiness of Jews to financially support Torah. Tamchin D'Oraisa refers to Jews who support Torah financially, give yeshivas their wherewithal to be able to survive. And that's what it means. That's what Esav was able to accomplish. That from now on, it's going to be hard to fund yeshivas. So perhaps that's part of the pshat, but it's hard for me to believe that that's what this whole episode of Yaakov and the Malach represents, that couldn't destroy the yeshivas, but it was able to make it. Now you're going to have to have Chinese auctions, and you're going to have to have fundraisers, and why he's going to have financial trouble, and that's what Esav was able to accomplish in this. I'm sure there's something to that, and we know that when it happens, it's not easy, but I think that it's saying really something much, much deeper than that. It's in the nature of things that not every Jew is going to be a Talmud Chacham, much less a great Talmud Chacham. But when Klal Yisrael is healthy, when the body politic of Klal Yisrael is healthy, then the relationship between Talmidei Chachamim, who embody the Mesorah of Har Sinai, and the people as a whole is mutually supportive. And the Torah leadership of Klal Yisrael has the trust of the people, and the interests of the two are the same. And when that's the case, when Torah is the aspiration of every Jew, and Torah greatness is the ambition of every parent, and then the Torah, and when the Torah leadership of Klal Yisrael has the support of the rank and file of society, then Tamchin D'Oraisa is strong. That means Klal Yisrael not only engages in the Limud HaTorah, but it supports as a whole. The people as a whole are supportive of the enterprise and the leadership of Torah. And when that is the case, then Yaakov, who represents Yisrael Saba, represents the Jewish people, embodies the Jewish people, is able to walk firmly towards his goal. But that's the ideal. You know, there was a time when every Jewish home in Russia had a picture of Rav Yitzchak Kochanan on the wall. Even the most unlearned people, they had a picture of Rav Yitzchak Kochanan. Everybody knew, everybody revered that this is the Gadol who leads Russian Jewry. I remember very vividly the reverence with which my grandmother, Rabbi Al-Sholem, used to speak about the Chafetz Chaim and Rav Chaim Moser. My grandmother herself was a very learned woman. My mother, maybe some of you may know my mother, she teaches here. It reminds me a lot of my grandmother. My grandmother was a Bas Gdolim. She grew up in close proximity with Gdol Yisrael. But she spoke of them not with familiarity, but with a very deep Yiras HaKavod. And that's, I think, broadly speaking, the meaning of Tamchin D'Oraisa, the Tmicha, the broad support of Torah leadership by Klal Yisrael as a whole, who give them the mandate to inspire and to lead. And it was that link between Talmid Chachamim and the people that the Sar shel Esav, at which the Sar shel Esav struck. And since that blow, the relationship between the Torah leadership of Klal Yisrael and the rank and file of Klal Yisrael has been fraught, and it has its ups and it has its downs. And there are times when people look at Talmid Chachamim with cynicism and suspicion, and Klal Yisrael therefore are reduced to holding actions and they're not able to lead Klal Yisrael effectively. And in that, at those times, Yisrael Saba Yaakov limps. He's hobbled. He's not able to function effectively. He's handicapped. I'll give you a historical example of such a time when the connection between the rabbinic leadership of Klal Yisrael and Torah leadership and the people was dysfunctional, and it had catastrophic consequences. When the Enlightenment came to Germany at the end of the 18th century, almost all of German Jewry abandoned Yiddishkeit wholesale. I mean, the Enlightenment was difficult everywhere. It was difficult later in Russia, wherever it came, wherever it was a culture clash and a culture shock. But in Germany, it was particularly catastrophic. A generation before, Germany had been one of the great Torah centers of Europe. It exported Rabbonim to Central Europe, Germany's Western Europe, and exported Rabbonim elsewhere. The Chasam Sofer grew up in Frankfurt in Germany, and then he was a Rav in Central Europe, in Hungary, in Pressburg. And all his life, he considered it a badge of pride that he was from Frankfurt. And he would say that the Frankfurt in which he grew up, the Frankfurt of his youth, was a Dor Dea that had not been seen since the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim. A little more than a generation later, when Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch accepted the invitation of a handful of families to come to Frankfurt and to lead them, there was nothing. Nothing left. There was not a mikveh. In fact, that was his first priority before building a shul. There wasn't an Orthodox shul. And before building a school, the first priority was to build a mikveh. There wasn't a cheder. Everything had crumbled before the onslaught of reform. And it was as if no one had even put up a fight. There was also wholesale shmat. People converted to Christianity in large numbers. And it was this way across Germany, in a way that really had no parallel anywhere else in Europe. So what happened? Why was it so catastrophic in Germany more than anywhere else? One of the reasons, and historians say this, one of the reasons is that because a generation before the Enlightenment, in the middle of the 18th century, there was an explosive machlokas that broke out between the two greatest rabbis in Germany, Avinash and Eibschitz and Rav Yaakov Emden, which I'm sure many of you know about. And that machlokas went on for decades, and it compromised the entire rabbinate in Germany. All the rabbonim in Germany were involved in that machlokas on one side or another. And the whole prestige of the rabbonus fell to a tremendous nadir. The details of the episode aren't working right now, and I don't doubt that Rabbi Yaakov Emden thought that he was saving the Jewish people. But those decades of machlokas fatally compromised rabbinic prestige. And therefore, a few decades later, when the challenge of emancipation and of reform faced German Jewry, the rabbis were unable to mount a meaningful response. That was an example of Ayiga B'Kafier Yaakov, because the Tamkum Derais had been weakened, because there were a lot of Rabbonim in Germany later as well, Choshev Rabbonim, Great Talmid Chachamim, because the relationship between the Rabbonim and the people had become unhealthy and become compromised. So the Rabbonim didn't have a mandate to lead. They weren't able to mount to an effective challenge. And German Jewry almost collapsed almost completely until it took later on, if Shimshon Raphael Hirsch was able to salvage something from the wreckage. When the Haskalah came to Russia, straight later, in the middle of the 19th century, the epicenter of the struggle was around the issue of rabbinic leadership. The Maskilim, who were in their own way were fanatics, and one of their strategies was to enlist the anti-Semitic Tsarist government in their cause, and they really muddied their reputation historically. But they also waged a no-holds-barred campaign to wrest control of the kilos from the rabbis. And they poured out a stream of literature whose aim was to sully the image of Talmid Chacham and of Gadol Yisrael. And there were papers and journalists who mocked the overly stringent rabbis. Torah Tmima, in his memoirs, very fascinating. Torah Tmima, besides what he has in Chumash, he was an interesting person altogether, but he wrote his memoirs, several volumes, very, very interesting. And he was related to a lot of, he was very plugged in the ghetto. He was related to the Nitziv and related to the Beis Halevi and related to a lot of big names. So he has a story that he once spent the night with the Beis Halevi in a motel, in a hostelry. And the Beis Halevi was visiting that little town. And all kinds of people came to knock on the Beis Halevi's door. The Beis Halevi was from one of the great, Rav Yoshe Ber Soloveitchik, the great-grandfather of the Rav and his namesake. It was Rav Shimon Valozhin, the Rav of Brisk. It was a famous Rav, so people came knocking on his door the whole night through. So one of the people who came in was a journalist. And the journalist asked him, what's with you rabbis? You're always coming up with chumras. Why don't you ever come up with kulas? We need more kulas. Why all these chumras? So the Beis Halevi said to him, recounts this in his memoirs, what, you're right, we need more kulas. I agree with you. I have a lot of kulas. I'll tell you some of my kulas. I have a kula that if somebody forgot to daven Meirev before midnight, he could daven until the morning. A lot of places can hold you can't daven Meirev, but he could still daven Meirev. And I'm Meikel, that if somebody forgot to count Sefirah Soimer, a lot of places can hold, that's the way we usually hold it. You can't make a bracha anymore. But I'm Meikel, you could still count Sefirah with the bracha, even if you forgot. And a lot of Rabbanim hold that Erev Tisha B'Av, even if it's Shabbos, not allowed to learn it, but I'm Meikel, you can learn Erev Shabbos and Tisha B'Av. And then I'm Meikel, you're allowed to fast on Rosh Hashanah if you want. So I have kulas also. Anyway, it's against that backdrop. It was at this time that Rabbi Sol Salanter quipped, very famous quip, that any rabbi whose balabatim don't want to fire him must not be doing his job. You know, the stories, all these pungent stories, there are a lot of them, but they're reflections of what was really a very bitter struggle, because the maskilim at the time, they recognized that the Achilles heel of Klal Yisrael is the tamchun d'oraisa, is the respect in which Gedolei Torah held, and if the Gedolei Yisrael themselves can't be brought to heel, then at least they can be cut off from behind. When is Kan Tamchin Deraisa most vulnerable? When is that relationship between Talmidei Chachamim and the rank and file of Klal Yisrael, when is it most weak? Talmidei Chachamim, of course, represent the voice of tradition. They carry the Masa HaDoris, the treasures of the past. That voice finds it most difficult to be heard at times when there's a generally held feeling in the world that society is passing through some kind of watershed and a new world is being born. That's what the time of the Maskilim was like that. There was this feeling that the past is over, there's this rupture in history, and now there's a new heaven and a new earth. It's a new world out there. And it's that kind of climate that the charge is most, it has the most leverage and the greatest audience. The charge can be leveled against the voice of traditional Talmidei Chachamim and against the voice of Mesorah, that it's on the wrong side of history, and the Rabbanim are on the wrong side of history. And they have to get with the program. The age of Hellenism, which is the backdrop to the story of Hanukkah, was also such a time when people felt that the whole world is changing. And there's this great break with the past. Greek culture colonized the entire known world. And even though the empire of Alexander and his generals didn't last that long, its cultural impact continued for centuries, and the power of Greek literature and art and thought overwhelmed the entire world, and still with us today. And at that time, many Jews also came to think that Chachmei HaTorah represented the past, and that the Jewish people had to change with the times. And the victory of Hanukkah was as much a victory over that spirit and that panic, but we have to change because the world is changing, than it was over the military might of the Seleucid Greeks. And I want to suggest that that's the connection between Gid HaNoshe and Hanukkah, and why the remez to Hanukkah is in this pasuk of Tveich Telech V'Hochem that refers to the Gid HaNoshe. Because both the Gid HaNoshe and the story of Hanukkah remind us that while there is a promise that we have that L'Sishokach Mipizaro, that there will always be Torah learning in Klal Yisrael, and there will be in every generation authentic Talmidei Chachamim to carry on the Mesorah of Maharosh Akilas Yaakov. The vulnerable spot is the Tamchin D'Horaisa, the healthy and supportive relationship between Chachmei HaTorah and Am Yisrael. And we live today at a time when in particular we see that Tamchin D'Horaisa is under attack. There's a climate which I don't remember in my lifetime. Not that old, but I don't remember such a climate of distrust between Rabbonim and Balabatim, between Rosh Yeshiva and the community, between Gedolei Yisrael and the public. Many, many, many communities. This feeling of suspicion. Balabatim suspect the rabbi's not really on the same page as us. The rabbis are on a different page than us than we are ideologically. It's a very difficult time for Rabbonim. And while there are many, many reasons for that, I think the most important one is the same one that we already encountered at other times in history when, like today, the idea caught hold that the world's being remade, old values are being transformed and overturned, and that the bearers of tradition are on the wrong side of history. And one of the lessons of Hanukkah, and maybe for us the most important lesson, is that we survived as a people and as a religion through many of the great cultural upheavals, through all of the great cultural upheavals of history, by resisting the call to come over to the right side of history. And at times, when at such times of upheaval, our weakest point, and the point at which the Sar Shel Esav can be most counted upon to attack, and the side that needs the most protection, therefore, because it's the most vulnerable, is the Tamchin Deraisa. Respect and fealty to those who carry the burden of our long tradition. Yaakov Avinu did survive that attack, and ultimately it was Vayover Yaakov Sholem Yershchem, and Hashmanoim survived and rallied the people, and as did our ancestors in all of the Golias and all of the difficult and contentious passages of our history, and as we shall also Vayom Meim Azman Hazeh. Any questions or...